If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Information discussed in this podcast may be sensitive in nature to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Mike Negrete was an excellent musician known for his trumpet skills and his talent on my personal favorite, the steel drums. In 1999, Mike was a freshman at UCLA on a music scholarship with so much going for him. College years are supposed to be about growing up, having some fun, hopefully not too much fun, making friends, and learning about life. Mike was doing all of this. On December 10th, 1999, Mike and some friends went to a party. Pretty normal thing for college students to do, right? At some time in the early morning hours, Mike and his roommate returned to their dorm room in Dykstra Hall. The roommate went to bed, but Mike stayed up playing video games online with another friend who actually lived right down the hall in the dorm. Around 4:30 a.m., their game ended, and Mike went to congratulate his friend on winning the game. Mike saw his friend and then turned around and headed back to his own dorm for the night. But that would be the last time anyone saw or heard from Mike. Where is Michael William Negrete? Hello, and welcome to a bonus episode of the Where Are They podcast. This is the first in our series of missing college students. You'd think on a college campus it would be hard to disappear. Thousands of students milling about, generally at all hours. How does one just vanish, never to be found? Makes no sense. If you are here, thank you so much for supporting our show, either as a subscriber or a Patreon member. We keep going thanks to our listener support, listeners like you. So the first college student we are covering today is the story and the case of Michael Negrete. Michael generally went by Mike to everyone who knew him, so that's what I'll be calling him from here on out. Mike Williams Negrete was born on March 25, 1982. He grew up with his parents in San Diego, California, along with two younger brothers. Mike was always musically talented, and that talent earned him a scholarship to UCLA, the University of California, Los Angeles. In August of 1999, Mike started his freshman year and lived on campus in Dykstra Hall. On December 10th, everyone was getting ready for finals the upcoming week, and then winter break. And that evening, there were a lot of parties around campus, maybe more than most other weekends, because it was kind of a last hurrah. Mike went to a party with his friends and made his way back to his dorm room in the early morning hours. His roommate went to sleep, but Mike wasn't ready to. He stayed awake and played a game online with a friend who was actually in the same dorm, but just lived right down the hall. Just after 4 a.m., Mike and his friend ended their game. Mike had lost, and he walked down the hall to congratulate his friend on the win. He stayed for a few minutes, and then around 4:30 p.m., Mike headed back to his own dorm room, finally ready to call it a night, or so everyone thought. The next morning, Mike's roommate woke up and saw that Mike wasn't there. He thought it was odd knowing that Mike had stayed up late playing games. He figured Mike would probably sleep half the day away. And he also noticed that Mike had left his wallet and his keys behind on the desk. Even stranger, where would he go without those items? But the roommate figured Mike just must have gone somewhere and he'd probably see him later. Your first instinct isn't to think that someone went missing, especially a college roommate. Later that night, Mike still hadn't come back to the dorm room, and he was finally reported missing. Authorities did start looking for Mike. His parents in San Diego were contacted, and a full search began. First, detectives started questioning everyone in the dorm, including the roommate and, of course, the friend down the hall. The friend said that Mike had left his room around 4:30 a.m., and he had believed that Mike was going back to his room and going to bed. They questioned everyone in the dorm building also, Dykstra Hall, but no one recalled seeing Mike at all around 4:30. Eventually, search dogs were brought in, and they were actually able to track Mike's scent across campus to a bus stop about a mile away where the scent ended. Now, Mike didn't have a car on campus, so that would make sense that he would take the bus somewhere. But at 4:30 a.m., and no one had seen him if he had been walking there to that bus stop. Plus, where would he be going? It's also unclear, since Mike lived on campus, of course, and spent a lot of time there, if the dogs had tracked a recent scent. Some people wondered if perhaps they were tracking an old scent, since Mike did live there, the campus, the dorm room, maybe he had taken that bus before. Was that actually a scent from December 10th and 11th? Mike was from San Diego and living at UCLA in Los Angeles. Where did he need to go on the night of December 10th? After partying all night and playing video games until 4 a.m.? Mike's background was thoroughly looked into, and even after talking to friends and family, nothing was found to lead anyone to believe that Mike had some sort of secret life or was hiding something or something else was going on that could have been dangerous or troublesome to Mike. Mike himself was also not troubled, not that anyone knew anyway. So would he have just left on his own and left behind his keys and his wallet and most, if not all, of his personal belongings right before final exams? The searches and investigation turned up nothing, as far as the public knew. They searched construction sites on campus. They searched garbage dumpsters. Nothing was found. The campus of UCLA is located on the west side of Los Angeles, surrounded by affluent neighborhoods, but also not far from the hills and valleys of Topanga Canyon State Park, Red Rock Canyon Mountains, and the Santa Monica Mountain region. It's actually also just 6 to 7 miles to Santa Monica Beach and the Pacific Ocean. Mike didn't have a car, so could he have taken the bus somewhere? Did he leave the area to go meet with someone? Or was he picked up by someone, either a pre-planned meeting or something that happened spur of the moment? In 1999, UCLA had an enrollment of 30,000 students. While populated, it was also 4:30 in the morning when Mike was last seen. Certainly a higher probability Mike could have left the area willingly or unwillingly without being seen. 7 months after his disappearance, police released a sketch of a man that had possibly been seen in the dorm in those early morning hours, the same hours in which Mike vanished. The man was described as Caucasian, possibly mid-30s, and it's really unclear why it took 7 months for this information to come out. Some have said that the student or students that reported seeing this man did report it to law enforcement right away, but they weren't taken seriously. Others have said that police were probably keeping this information hush-hush until they finally decided to release it for possible leads. Law enforcement never really clarified why it took 7 months to release that sketch. Now here's where things get interesting. A family friend of the Negrete's, a man by the name of Damon Van Dam, resembled that sketch quite a bit. This man also admitted to being in the Los Angeles area at the time of Mike's disappearance, but denied being near the campus. Damon Van Dam also lived in San Diego, so it's unclear if he gave a reason for why he was in Los Angeles. Of course, this was before the time of tracking cell phones. Possibility of tracking a cell phone isn't really an option here, so we really don't know if we can prove or disprove Damon Van Dam's statements as to where he was. Damon Van Dam also admitted to being into sex and drug parties, along with his wife. At the same time, some information started coming out that Mike might have been experimenting with ecstasy. So people started talking about this Damon Van Dam, but at no point did he ever become an official person of interest or a suspect. I have seen both the sketch artist rendition of the man in the dorms and I've seen the photograph of Van Dam. They do look a lot alike. But sometimes I think, especially with these police sketch drawings, sometimes our minds help us see what we want to see. There was virtually no trail for the police to follow, few leads that led to anything substantial, and still no sign of Mike Negrete anywhere, even months and months after he vanished. Another strange and terribly tragic twist in this story would come in 2002. Damon Van Dam's 7-year-old daughter was murdered. A neighbor would be tried and convicted of this heinous, horrible crime. And during that investigation, Van Dam's character once again came into question. Again, it was brought up that he was into these sex and drug raves and parties. And in fact, the night his daughter was murdered, he was doing drugs and had women in the house. But Van Dam admitted to only using marijuana that night, said they didn't do anything else. And really, none of that, of course, gives the neighbor who was convicted any more reason for doing what he did. There is no excuse. I don't care if a crazy sex and drug-fueled party was happening. In one strange interview that Van Dam did with a radio host, he made a strange comment that people latched onto. He voluntarily said, without being asked, quote, "It is strange that I was in Los Angeles when Mike Negrete disappeared, and I was in Florida when Adam Walsh disappeared," end quote. Why did he even bring that up if he wasn't prompted or asked? Other than all of these odd circumstances, there was nothing concrete or really nothing of any substance pointing to Van Dam as a person of interest. Mike's younger brother later came out and said that he knew Mike had started dabbling with ecstasy, and he thinks that Mike probably left the dorm that night in search of some, or with plans to meet up with someone, and in the course of doing that, met with trouble, likely foul play. Police have also said they suspect foul play, if only because Mike left behind everything. His social security number hasn't been used, bank accounts have not been touched, and he had no reason to leave on his own or disappear, or even possibly harm himself or commit suicide. No one believed that. Whatever he was up to that night, it seems no one close to Mike knew about it, at least that they have fessed up to. And detectives have said that everyone close to Mike seemed very cooperative and forthcoming with information. So what happened at 4:30 a.m. to UCLA freshman Mike Negrete? Mike is described as a Caucasian male, about 5'8" tall, and weighing around 130 pounds when he was last seen in December of 1999. He was 18 years old and would today be 41 years old. He was known to be wearing a blue plaid shirt, khaki shorts, and white canvas tennis shoes. Anyone with any information is asked to call the UCLA Police Department at 310-825-1491 or the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department at 323-890-5500. Also, the man in the police sketch is described as approximately 35 years old in 1999, about 5'7" to 5'8" tall, with a heavy build. He was wearing a shiny gray jacket with a turquoise-colored design. Absolutely scary that a young man can vanish from a college campus without a trace for so many years. I do hope his case can continue to be talked about, and hopefully soon his family and friends can have answers. There is a Facebook group set up for him, Never Forget Mike Negrete. It is still active to this day and helps keep his name out there. In 2011, Lauren Spearer was a hardworking college student at Indiana University. Lauren had a lot of friends, was majoring in textile merchandising, and overall had a bright future ahead of her. That spring, she had spent her entire spring break from the university over in Israel, planting trees and volunteering. She was very involved in her Jewish community center and enjoyed helping and doing volunteer work with them. Lauren had also been active at the Camp Towanda in Pennsylvania, and she would meet a lot of her lifelong friends there. On June 3rd, 2011, Lauren wanted to go out, but her boyfriend, Jesse Wolf, did not. Lauren made the decision to go out with some other friends that night, and Jesse stayed home. They stayed in touch throughout the evening, back and forth, texting, until Jesse finally fell asleep. Lauren was at Kilroy's Sports Bar in Bloomington into the early morning hours when she returned back to her friend's apartment. They wanted her to just stay since she was so intoxicated, but she didn't want to. She would allegedly leave to go back to her own apartment. The next day, Jesse, her boyfriend, tried to call and text Lauren's phone, but instead of receiving a message back from Lauren, instead he got a message from the bar. Lauren had left her phone there. After not being able to reach Lauren all day, she was finally reported missing. Where is Lauren Spearer? Hello, and welcome to a bonus episode of the Where Are They podcast and part two of our Missing College Students series. This story you might have heard about at some point before. Her case did receive some national attention, which actually prompted some negative media attacks, which we'll get into a little bit more later. But it has now been almost 12 years, and there still has been no sign of 20-year-old Lauren Spearer. Lauren Spearer was born January 17, 1991, in Scarsdale, New York, to parents Charlene and Robert. Lauren was raised in the affluent New York town of Scarsdale, and she had a pretty good upbringing and childhood. As a child and a teenager, she would spend some time at Camp Towanda in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania. And it was there that she would meet the people that would become her friends throughout her teen years, and many who would actually attend Indiana University with Lauren. It was also at Camp Towanda where she met her boyfriend, Jesse Wolf. In 2009, Lauren started her freshman year at Indiana University. She was majoring in textile merchandising and was very active on campus, particularly with the Jewish community. In the spring of 2011, while many college students are heading to Panama City or Cancun for spring break, Lauren went to Israel to volunteer and plant trees. In June of 2011, while still at Indiana University, Lauren decided to spend out a weekend having fun, cutting loose. On Friday, June 3rd, Lauren wanted to go out on the town, but her boyfriend, Jesse, did not. Lauren decided to go with some other friends while Jesse stayed home. And they would text back and forth, on and off, throughout the evening, while Lauren would bar hop with friends at some nearby campus bars. Just after midnight, Spearer would leave her apartment with a friend named David Ron. They both went to Jay Rosenbaum's apartment, and they would also meet up with Corey Rossman, who was Rosenbaum's neighbor. At 1:46 a.m., Lauren and her friends enter Kilroy's Sports Bar, a popular local bar for college kids about a half a mile from the center of campus. Lauren is seen on surveillance video entering that bar at 1:46 a.m. At 2:27 a.m., Lauren leaves the bar with friend Corey Rossman. Together, they walk back to Lauren's apartment, and they are seen by several people along the way. And it was noted that she seemed extremely intoxicated, and she was barefoot. It would also later be learned that at that time, she had actually left her cell phone behind at the bar also. The bar did have a sandy patio kind of area, and it's believed that's why she took her shoes off. And apparently was too intoxicated to put them back on when she left. At 2:30 a.m., Lauren was seen entering her apartment, and then she would again leave her apartment at 2:48 a.m. After she left the apartment, Lauren entered an alley that runs between College Avenue and Morton Street. There were security cameras on nearby buildings that showed her exiting the alley at 2:51 a.m. and walking towards an empty lot. Spearer's purse, along with her keys, would later be found in that alley. Lauren and Carrie Rossman now would arrive at Rossman's apartment a few minutes later, and Michael Beth, Corey's roommate, was at the apartment when they got there. Michael would say that Corey was very intoxicated himself, was stumbling around. He had actually vomited on the carpet on his way up the stairs. Michael said that he escorted Corey to bed at that point, and then he tried to convince Lauren to just spend the night and sleep there. He said she was also extremely intoxicated. But Michael said that Lauren kept insisting she wanted to return back to her own apartment. Now, this must have went on for several minutes because at 3:30 a.m., Michael said that he phoned his neighbor, Jay Rosenbaum, also a friend of Lauren's, remember. And Michael wanted him to come over and help take care of Lauren. He said that Spearer was attempting to get Michael to go back to her apartment with her and have some more to drink. Lauren eventually did give up on Michael, and she walked herself over to Jay's apartment. Lauren asked to borrow Jay's phone, and she tried to make a few phone calls to friends, but no one answered. She also didn't leave any messages. At 4:30 a.m., Jay said that Lauren finally left his apartment, and he watched her leave, heading back towards her apartment. He said she was still barefoot at this time. From there, Lauren Spearer would disappear. It was Lauren's boyfriend, Jesse, that would report her missing after trying to reach her the next morning. Realizing none of their friends knew where she was and that she had left her cell phone at the bar the night before, he started to panic. Many things would come out about Lauren in the days and the weeks and the months that followed. Friends told investigators that not only had Lauren been drinking that night, she had also done some cocaine, and she had taken Klonopin. Additionally, Lauren has a condition called long QT syndrome, which is a heart condition that could really make this drug use even more dangerous for her. Police did find some small amounts of cocaine in her apartment as well. Now, at this time, many of her friends came out to talk about Lauren's drug use, which according to some of them had been going on for quite a while. In August of 2011, 2 months after Lauren's disappearance, authorities also followed up on a tip that led them to searching a local landfill. They spent 9 days searching and ultimately found nothing. Leads and tips would continue to pour in, but nothing of any consequence was ever uncovered. On April 24th, 2015, 4 years after Lauren vanished, another college student would go missing from Indiana University. Hannah Wilson had also been at Kilroy's bar the night she disappeared. Police, of course, had to wonder if there was a connection. Her body would sadly be found the next day, however, in another county, and a suspect was arrested. Daniel Messel had left his cell phone near where her body was found, and that's how he was caught. Authorities have nothing concrete to tie this man to Lauren in any way, but they have never ruled out the possibility that he could have been involved. In January of 2016, a property in Martinsville was searched and cadaver dogs were brought in. It isn't known exactly what took detectives there, but when the cadaver dogs hit on an area in the backyard, the FBI and state specialists converged on the property to do a very thorough search. They even brought in anthropologists to sift through the dirt, and they impounded a pickup truck that was also on that property. But nothing would come of that possible lead either. So years later, we are left with a few thoughts on the case of Lauren Spearer. Was she possibly abducted while walking back to her apartment in those early morning hours? Perhaps someone saw her barefoot and still intoxicated and saw an opportunity to commit a crime. And if this is the case, Lauren could be anywhere. Or is it possible that her friends that she was with that night know more than they are saying? Some have speculated that maybe Lauren had possibly overdosed accidentally and the friends decided to cover it up. Or if maybe someone had slipped something into Lauren's drink that night, making her even more intoxicated than she normally might have been. Her family does believe that the friends know more than they are saying. And at one point, they even tried to sue them for negligence. Their claim was that they should have taken better care of Lauren that night. But those lawsuits would eventually be dismissed, with the judge stating that the responsibility of caring for Lauren wasn't on them. Lastly, many people still wonder if there was a connection to Hannah Wilson's case in Daniel Messel. Daniel was convicted of Hannah's murder, but we really don't have anything pointing to any involvement in Lauren's case. I don't know, but I am curious to know your thoughts on this one. Lauren's case did receive a fair amount of media attention. If you're looking for more information or a deep dive on her case, her story was covered by several good true crime YouTubers and podcasters. Last year, Crime Weekly did a three-part deep dive into her case. You can find them on most major podcast platforms and over on YouTube as well. And 5 years ago, Trace Evidence podcast did a good job telling her story also. Lauren Spearer is described as a Caucasian female, 4 foot 11 inches tall and weighing around 90 to 100 pounds when she was last seen on June 3rd, 2011. Lauren has blonde hair and blue eyes. Lauren was 20 years old then and would today be 32. Anyone with any information on Lauren Spearer is asked to contact Bloomington Police Department at 812-339-4477 or Crime Stoppers, where you can remain anonymous, at 317-262-TIPS. There is a website the family put together for her at findlauren.com, and you can also follow their Facebook community page at the Official Lauren Spearer Updates from Her Family. And as I have mentioned before, make sure you're following an official responsible page on social media if you do go looking for more information. There's a lot of pages out there that have been created for missing persons that aren't always the most up and up. I also wanted to touch briefly on the media phenomenon that kind of developed during this case. When Lauren's case started to receive so much media attention, there was actually a backlash of people fighting against the media for telling Lauren's story, dubbing the term missing white woman syndrome. Now, I can tell you for certain that there is a disparity among which cases are reported on and which aren't. I do think there's a lot of factors. It's my personal belief that a missing person is a missing person, regardless of race, religion, ethnicity, age, sex, gender, any of it. If a person goes missing, they deserve to have their story told and to be found. And I have seen many cases that have been almost completely ignored by the media, cases that should have received a lot of attention. I also don't think we should ignore cases of missing white women because they fall under the mantra of missing white woman syndrome. I just don't think we should ignore any cases of any missing people. So what is the answer here? How do we fix this? The case of Lauren Spearer, if you dive deep into her story, has a lot of CCTV footage, which has made this case a little bit more prevalent among the web sleuths, analyzing the CCTV footage for clues. So there is a lot of rumors and speculation on this case out there. But this is a story of a 20-year-old young woman who had her life ahead of her, who vanishes into thin air on a college campus. The case of Lauren Spearer is one of those cases I really, really hope is solved soon. And we have answers. It's been 12 long years. Someone out there knows where Lauren is. Thank you all so much for listening to Lauren's story today and for being a supporter of our show. We couldn't keep bringing you these stories without having the support that we do. We will be back again very soon with another unsolved missing person case. And until then, stay safe and hug your loved ones.